listening to the Caffeinated Thoughts podcast. And this is Shane Vanderhart. Happy Friday. Welcome to our first podcast of 2018. Today I wanted to talk about the infrastructure reform package that President Trump has been touting and Congress will be taking a look at this year. Joining me to discuss this is Craig Stevens with GAIN Now, that is Grow America's Infrastructure Now. He's their spokesperson. He was also a senior advisor to the Secretary of Education under the Bush administration in a prior life. But before we get to that conversation, first a word from our sponsors.
Hi, this is Brian Myers. When I needed a better life insurance plan, I found it with Travis Riswold of Modern Woodmen of America. When I first met Travis, he wasn't like some other life insurance agents that can be pushy and try to get you to buy something. Travis just made himself available to me. That was it. He told me to let him know if and when I needed anything, and he stayed in touch. When the day came and I did need to make some changes with my life insurance, Travis met with me and walked me through several options so I could make an informed decision. Ultimately, it was the best decision for my situation. So if you need a life insurance plan that makes sense for you, call my friend Travis Riswold with Modern Woodmen. His number is 515-883-0029. That's Travis Riswold with Modern Woodmen. He can help you find the life insurance you need. Call him at 515-883-0029.
At American Principles Project, we believe that human dignity should be at the heart of public policy. We work in all 50 states and in Washington, D.C. to promote life, religious freedom, local control over education, authentic economic progress for working Americans, and a return to constitutional principles such as federalism. Want to help American Principles Project? Visit our website today, AmericanPrinciplesProject.org. That's AmericanPrinciples, P-L-E-S, Project.org. Sign up for email updates. Help us out. We want to work with you. That's AmericanPrinciplesProject.org.
And without further ado, here's my conversation with Craig Stevens from Grow America's Infrastructure Now. Well, hey, Craig, thank you so much for talking with us. I just wanted to first ask, what are current challenges when it comes to infrastructure?
Shane, thanks for having me, and that's a great opening question. You know, the American Society of Civil Engineers has actually given our infrastructure a D-plus rating, and that is inferior to a number of countries around the globe that are actually seeking to get more tourists or get more business into those countries. You know, we see every day places where our infrastructure needs repair, whether it's roads, bridges, many of our nation's airports, and even our nation's water infrastructure. The potable water infrastructure has been around for, you know, almost a century in many places. Mm-hmm. And while that served us a long time, these cast iron pipes, what we're seeing is just a need to update these. And there's a new technology called a ductile iron pipe, which a lot of communities are changing over to, that can last another 200 years. And I think this is probably a once in a generation opportunity where we've got an administration of President Trump and, you know, bipartisan members of Congress, and even at the state and local level, individuals and policymakers who are looking to make serious investments in our nation's infrastructure. And, you know, if we can get together on this at the federal, state, and local levels, I think we can have a real serious improvement across the board.
Yeah, I know in Iowa, for instance, they raised the gas tax by a couple cents, mm-hmm. in order to bolster our highway fund. We're still not sure exactly, you know, how much of an impact that's made. But, you know, I know a lot of folks are probably thinking, you know, if they're fiscally, they're concerned about the fiscal implications of what an infrastructure bill might require at the federal level. How do you address that, doing a federal or infrastructure reform bill in a way that's fiscally sound?
Well, I think what you're doing there in Iowa with a user fee actually makes a lot of sense, as long as that money is dedicated to the highway fund. It doesn't get sucked off into or siphoned off into another project. At the national level, we've had the same gasoline tax, 18.4 cents per gallon, for decades, and it hasn't even been indexed for inflation. Had it been, we'd be at about 32 cents per gallon. And I know folks want to pay more for at the pump, but I think most Americans recognize that if it's actually going to go to a jobs program, not an entitlement program, but a jobs program like infrastructure development, then they're going to support that. But having good governance and making sure that our tax dollars are being used in a smart way is something that's important. Now, when it comes to leveraging federal funds, I think the president right now is talking about investing about $200 billion and hoping to get about $800 billion in return, a 4-to-1 ratio when it comes to private public investment. And ways that he can do this is actually to streamline some of the regulatory processes right now. You know, he's made a big deal out of talking about his goal to actually reduce the number of regulations on the books and actually requiring many of his agencies to eliminate two regulations for every one that they put in place. And just by doing this, just by providing regulatory certitude to these companies that would invest billions of dollars of capital into an infrastructure project, I mean, that provides them with the opportunity to actually move forward with this. Because if you look at some of these projects, especially the privately funded ones, and I'll talk about oil pipelines and gas pipelines, natural gas pipelines specifically. Right. I mean, these cost billions of dollars. Up in Iowa, you've heard of the Dakota Access Pipeline, of course. That cost Energy Transfer Partners $3.8 billion. That's private money, and that's money that they had to get from their investors and also from capital loans from the banks. And there needs to be some surety that line will actually go into place before a bank's ever going to loan that kind of money. So that's a huge outlay for a company. But if they recognize and appreciate that the regulations on the books will be enforced fairly and predictably, they're much more apt to invest that kind of money.
Right. It seems like, you know, in the last few recent years, we've focused on infrastructure briefly when something big happens. Like, for instance, I remember back when the I-35 bridge up in Minnesota collapsed. Mm-hmm. Everybody was talking about infrastructure and how many bridges do we have that are like this. And then it suddenly goes away and nobody pays attention to it. Why hasn't this been a priority?
Yeah, that is a vexing question, because there has been, again, bipartisan support, and there has been considerable concern. Like every time you mention the bridge up in Minnesota, I mean, every time you go over a bridge, you recognize that there are some that are in disrepair. I mean, I grew up near in Western New York, where they've been trying to replace the Peace Bridge for 30 years. And part of the issue is they just can't get the parties together, that there are certain requirements on the amount of materials that are being used, a certain requirement on who's actually going to be able to build it. And I think, you know, all stakeholders need to come together when it comes to an infrastructure bill and to actually move this forward. That includes labor, that includes federal, and that includes state policymakers, and to ensure that it's a process, but also that the funding is there and you know, folks can understand where this entire process needs to move in order for it to be successful.
So what would you ideally like to see out of an infrastructure reform bill?
So I think some real federal money is something that the federal government needs to put on the table in order to jumpstart this, and also streamlining of these regulations and regulatory certitude. I mean, that is really so important to these companies and these banks that would loan the companies money to do these major infrastructure projects. I think another thing you're going to see too, and the president's already talked about this when he talked about the national security, is updating our wireless infrastructure. It's kind of interesting, you know, General Eisenhower, when he was general, recognized that he couldn't get troops across the country when we were under attack. Mm-hmm. So when he became president, he made sure that we built out a new highway infrastructure. And ostensibly that was to get troops, you know, from one side of the country to the other,
right,
but also had the added benefit of helping commerce, right? Now the president, Trump, is looking at where the next generation of commerce goes, and that's going to be wireless. And he is supporting infrastructure into the next generation 5G generation of our wireless infrastructure. And already, you know, you've got major players like AT&T, Verizon, and Comcast, and others who want to invest significant billions of dollars into this infrastructure in order for their process to work better. But they do need help, certainly at the federal, state, and local levels, to site these transistors, these new boxes that will actually enable this 5G to take place.
Now, in terms of the funding, the federal funding that would go into the infrastructure reform, Is this something that's just going to be block granted in the states and the states decide, or are the feds going to pick and choose? You know, is the possibility that the feds will pick and choose different projects?
I think anything's on the table right now. As you know, the whole legislative process, especially when it comes to appropriation, is a sausage-making process.
Right.
But I would think that they'll take a look at those projects that would that are nearly shovel-ready or shovel-ready, and also projects that are desperately needed. And I think you'll probably see some bridges, some rail. I know there's some discussion of light rail coming online in certain places of the country that I think certainly local municipalities would want to match the federal dollars, so there might be some impetus to put some federal money there. And it's all kind of a negotiation moving forward. But I think the more state and local money or funding or mechanisms for payment, whether that's through a toll or through a user fee, I think that would also loosen up the federal dollars to help support that.
So how is this different than, say, because I know this was something that, you know, we were told the stimulus package back under the Obama administration was supposed to do and address, create jobs as well as help rebuild some of our infrastructure. Did that really make a dent? How is this current proposal different than that?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. It's a question that Congress is going to kind of grapple with here, because we did spend nearly $800 billion in that stimulus package. I think the difference is, are these infrastructure projects that we're now considering are actually long view projects. And when you talk about updating our nation's wireless infrastructure, I mean, that is an infrastructure project that will actually benefit us for decades to come. It's not just filling potholes. It's not just, dredging lakes. These are projects that are in desperate need, but that will also help encourage future investment and commerce moving forward. And if you look at things like energy infrastructure, again, midstream, I mean, the plastics industry is fed by natural gas. Mm-hmm. We have to make sure that we have an infrastructure to move the natural gas from where it's underground to an actual cracker, to a place where it actually be used in the plastics industry. Our nation still needs 800 million gallons of petroleum every day to feed the transportation and also our economy. Right. So making sure that we've got the resources, to transport that energy from the oil patch to the refinery and then up to the gas station is incredibly important to make sure that our economy is fueled every day.
Well, that kind of leads to the next question. You know, they're expecting basically the U.S. crude oil production to flirt with record highs in 2018. What's leading to that? I mean, what's going on that's causing that?
So the EIA, the Energy Information Administration, right now estimates that we use about 20 million barrels of crude a day, and we actually drill and ship out about 9.5 million from the U.S. So about half of our production, a little less than half of our daily need is met with domestic production. One of the things that's actually helping us increase that production is one, energy infrastructure, having an ability to ship it traditionally via pipeline or by train to refineries from the oil patch. But the other is new technologies that are allowing us to dig deeper, get into wells and locations where there is oil that we just couldn't get at, even 10 years ago. Right. I used to work for the Department of Energy, and we would talk to these wildcatters about, what they're trying to do with the technology they're trying to introduce. A lot of those wildcatters are gone now. It's all the super majors. And so what they've been able to do is invest significant sums in new technologies to make sure that they can get at these resources and then pump them out.
And how huge is the Trump administration approving the drilling in Anwar, the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge in Alaska?
I think the principle that he has of expanding where we can get our natural resources and access those natural resources. Anwar is tough because it is so expensive and so hard to get there.
Right.
And it will be a challenge from an engineering perspective. But if you look at the other things that he's doing, I mean, ultimately, when it makes sense for the market to go there, they will certainly look to do that. And they also have to build a pipeline from there,
right,
to get the oil out. But he's also expanding in the Gulf and along the Atlantic coast. These are places where there is significant oil reserve and there is significant energy. These natural resources allow us to provide more oil to the world market and to the U.S. market, which helps us not only with our U.S. economy, but also with our national security. Because as you know, a lot of the oil on the world market come from the Middle East. And a lot of these places are people that don't really like the United States and really don't like what we stand for. So the more that we're able to, put more of our product out there, dampen the price, and certainly dampen our reliance on foreign sources of energy, that certainly benefits us from a national security and a jobs perspective.
Right. So part of what we're also going to need as oil production ramps up that, you've mentioned, the ability to get the oil from point A to point B via pipelines and perhaps other means. Do we even have enough refineries to deal with that? Because that's something that we necessarily haven't seen a lot of growth in that area. The refineries have been around for years. We haven't really expanded that, have we?
Right. Most of our refineries are at about 90% capacity. They tend to go up to 96% capacity. Sometimes they go down to 85% when they're being tooled up. Currently, I think we do have the domestic capacity in our refining. We do have enough domestic refining capacity here in the United States to maintain what we're drilling out of our domestic resources, and actually out of Canada and Mexico too. But you're absolutely right. In siting a refinery has been so difficult in the United States because certainly there is a NIMBY, a not in my backyard mentality when it comes to siting these. So what the companies have done is actually they've expanded the footprint of some of these refineries and actually made them more efficient. But it is a challenge. It certainly is a challenge moving forward as we continue to consume 800 million gallons of crude a day.
And I want to respect your time. We have just about a minute left. Anything you'd like to highlight that maybe we haven't discussed regarding the infrastructure bill?
I think that should the Congress and the President settle on something, it would be a positive stimulus to the nation's economy. We're looking at literally thousands of construction jobs to help support this infrastructure. And then once the infrastructure is built, and this will help our daily commerce for generations to come.
Well, Craig, thank you so much for your time. I appreciate it. And, have a happy 2018.
Thank you, Shane.
All right. Take care, man. Bye.
And that concludes this episode of the Caffeinated Thoughts broadcast. Thank you so much for listening. If you happen to be listening to this podcast somewhere other than on our website, be sure to check out caffeinatedthoughts.com. That's caffeinatedthoughts.com, or Google Caffeinated Thoughts. It'll show up right at the top of your search page. Hey, this is Shane Vanderhart. Have a great weekend. Until next time, my friends, take care.